Food historian Rachel Loudon has a slightly different take on the usual food histories that we read about. She looks at how technology has shaped what we eat now and what we've eaten for the past 20,000 years. She also has some very interesting things to say about the food movements of today. She's written Cuisine and Empire, Cooking in World History. Rachel, good to have you back with us.
It's great to be back, Lynn.
You know, I always think that every book, especially a book like yours, that's a book about history, has a question that it's trying to answer. What was yours?
Mine was motivated by the realization that we are, as is almost a cliche, the only animal that cooks, the only animal that transforms natural products before we put them in our mouths. And I wanted to tell the story of all these amazing transformations of grapes into wine, of milk into butter, and to see what difference it's made in human history.
Now, the subtitle of the book is Cooking in World History, but the title of the book is Cuisine and Empire. So where does the empire come into the picture?
The empire comes into the picture because today we tend to think of cuisines as national cuisines. It's Italian cuisine, French cuisine, Vietnamese cuisine, Thai cuisine. But of course, nations, even the oldest nations, have only come into existence in the last couple of hundred years. And so for most of history, the political unit that shaped and transmitted cuisines was the empire. And one empire looked at another empire, and if they thought their cuisine was great, they copied it.
And then there was all the trading and the exchanging and the conquering. So there's always been a crossing of cuisines, a sharing of cuisines.
Oh, absolutely. One of the really striking things is that you can tell the story at the grand level, if you imagine yourself flying over the earth and looking down, in terms of great spreads of cuisines, whether it's Buddhist cuisine in the first 1,000 years after AD, or whether it's Islamic cuisine, or then Catholic cuisine, and more recently, modern Western cuisine.
You've given yourself an interesting span in this book. You start 20,000 years ago with man trying to master grains and get them to be edible. But you bring us to today and you talk about the myths and the romances of food today. What do you mean by that?
That we have become accustomed in the last quarter century to thinking about food in a way that people have never thought about it really before in history. We tend to think that it's been produced in the past by small yeoman farmers, by peasants. We stress the fresh and natural. We downplay cooking, at least in the public pronouncements, because of the emphasis on fresh and natural. We assume that home cooked is the best way to go. And these are very recent kind of ideas.
Really? I mean, I'm thinking the model, at least in a lot of people's minds, is what we've had documented over the past maybe 500, 600, 800 years. A lot of it Western-based, but the idea that people didn't have restaurants, they cooked at home, they ate what they had handy to them, mostly. I don't understand where the myth comes in.
I think the myth comes in because we have a very specific notion of the family meal. Ours assumes that it's mother and father and children seated around a table, which is both the source of physical and of spiritual or social nutrients or nutrition. Consider, for example, Hawaiian society up until the middle of the 19th century. Sure, the food was prepared locally, but women were not allowed to prepare taro. Men and women were not allowed to eat together. If they did, the women were killed.
What? And, they were killed?
Yes, the last person to receive this punishment was in the early 19th century. So, yes, in a certain, I mean, the food was local and it was prepared locally, but it was a long way from our notion of the nurturing family meal.
Well, what about the idea of eating close to the ground?
Yes, obviously, people did have to eat close to the ground, but the trouble is that most of what the ground produces tends to rot, go bad, smell, and it's absolutely essential, since everybody has a season when food is not available, whether it's a wet season or a dry season or a cold season, to preserve food, so that the huge energy of societies went into trying to constantly preserve food so that they could survive through the difficult seasons. People have always put their best thinking, their most ingenious ideas into trying to find new ways to turn plants and animals into something that we believe to be good to eat. And I don't believe we've reached the end of our ingenuity or our cleverness in finding new ways to make food good to, or raw materials good to eat. And we obviously want to continue that.
Rachel, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Lynn.
Rachel Loudon has written Cuisine and Empire, and I have to add, if you have any interest in Hawaiian food, her earlier book, The Food of Paradise, it's a gem.